My name is Elmer Wood. I'm director here at the Village, and we're leading a session on rewriting the Bible, beginning with Matthew 25. Let's begin with a brief prayer. Good Lord, you've begun the day. Now begin with us once again. We're glad you keep taking us back. Open us up, our hearts, our minds, our lips, and especially open us up to one another. Through Jesus the Christ. Amen. Henry McKeever, our instrumentalist in residence this week, is going to lead us off. He sat in on part of that discussion. You want to come up here and get us started with some music? This is what musicians do it for.
There's a plenty of organ.
Sing a song this morning called Many Colors. The words are real simple. Many colors, many kinds, and every one of us is looking for some peace of mind. And if you disagree with that, you don't have to sing, but usually people agree with that. And in connection with Elmer's service, I guess I would say that peace of mind is, oftentimes we think of peace of mind as maybe an internal thing, quiet. Peace of mind is a lot bigger than that, which you're going to find out today in this session. But I still believe that it starts within. We need to make some kind of peace in ourselves and maybe satisfy some of these needs in ourselves before we find ways to implement them in the world. Anyway, also fits with it, with the theme for the week, Many Colors. It goes like this. Many colors, many kinds, and every one of us is looking for some peace of mind. Many colors, many kinds, and every one of us is looking for some peace of mind. You can do that? Give it a try. Okay, we'll do the chorus several times. Many colors, many kinds, and every one of us is looking for some peace of mind. Feeling all alone, closing in on trouble, far away from home. Just turn around and leave it all behind. For every one of us is looking for some peace of mind. Here we go. Many colors, many kinds, and every one of us is looking for some peace of mind. Many colors, many kinds, and every one of us is looking for some peace of mind. I walked into church and heard the preacher say, praise the Lord and prepare the way. Now greet your neighbor, and you're sure to find that every one of us is looking for some peace of mind. Now, of course, I know you feel like you're starting to know this chorus right now. Right? Just dying to jump in. But before we sing it again, why don't you do what the verse says? Greet your neighbor, maybe somebody you don't know yet. Say hi to him. Give him a handshake. Okay, let's have a little diminuendo here, okay? There we go. Yes, there's a need in everyone for blessed assurance
the day will come when the promise becomes the sign, and every one of us will have a little peace of mind. Here we go. Many colors, many kinds, and every one of us is looking for a peace of mind. Many colors, many kinds, and every one of us is looking for a peace of mind. Every one of us is looking for a peace of mind.
Working off of some whiteboards up here. I don't know about you people back there being able to see. If you want to move over to this side, you're welcome to. It'll be sort of hard. I'll try to rearrange it when we get to that. Just so you're forewarned. Feel free to run around if you feel like it. Two things. I'm fairly satisfied with the Bible we got. I'm not too satisfied with the way we use it at times or don't use it or pay attention to it, and we'll be talking more about that. And the other is I'm fairly well convinced, and that was even before I came to Holden, that the people of God have insights into the scriptures, and that you don't need either a PhD or seminary training to be able to share some stuff that's in there. So I do have a lot of belief in the fact that you have things to offer. So we're going to ask you to work during the morning as well. But let's start by turning to, Luke 16, 1 to 9. Luke 16, 1 to 9. One of those funny Bible classes where you open the Bible and read, you know. There's room over on this side yet. A couple of chairs over here if you want to come in. Would somebody with a fairly good voice read for us Luke 16, 1 to 9?
Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer.' The manager said to himself, 'What shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses.' So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' 800 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 400. Then he asked the second, 'And how much do you owe?' 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, 'Take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings.'"
Thank you. Quickly, what feelings do you have after hearing that? Not what questions you have, but what feelings do you have?
Good example of sarcasm in the Bible.
Okay, that's sort of an analysis. I wonder what the feelings are that you have.
Maybe dishonesty pays off.
Okay. How do you feel about that?
That's it's always bothered me.
Okay, you're bothered.
Yeah,
somebody else. How do you feel?
Upset.
Okay. How about this translation? There was a certain labor racketeer who had grown rich on sweetheart contracts and illegal use of union pension funds. One day he found the FBI was tailing him, and he began to suspect that there was no escape for him. So what did he do? Carefully, he put a large sum of money away so no one could touch it, and then he faced trial. He was duly convicted. And after he had exhausted all his rights to appeal, he finally served a sentence at the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary. And having served his time, he took his money, moved to Miami Beach, where he lived happily ever after. I think it's the same story. I'm still angry, but I still. Let's do another one. Let's take a look at Matthew 9:36-38. By the way, don't forget, Jesus said we should be like that person in that last story. Somebody read Matthew 9:36-38. When he came to the apartment building, he saw the tenants, and he had compassion for them because it was winter, and the pipes were broken. There were junkies in the hallway. And a straw corporation was planning to turn the building into condominiums. And they were harassed and helpless, like poor people without an organizer. And then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few." I think it's the same story. And so sometimes rewriting the Bible is not at all looking for easy outs, but finding ways that things can get tougher for us and that we have to struggle with. And I thought maybe a good place to start is in Matthew 25, the story that many of us are familiar with. We always call it the Last Judgment. In Matthew 25, verses 31 to 46. Matthew 25:31-46. Again, would someone read that for us? Some of the good clarion voice. What's clarion mean? I don't know. Rings the bell. Well, we have our chimes. Here, we get our chimes in one way or the other. Someone willing to do that?
31.
Chapter 25 of Matthew, 31-46.
And he will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. Now learn the parable from the fig tree, when its branch has already...
I think you're wrong. Chapter 25, beginning in verse 31.
Where are you?
Okay.
He's got the clarion voice.
Yeah. But when the Son of Man comes in his glory, all the angels with him,
right,
then he will sit on his glorious throne, and all the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them from one another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats, and he will put the sheep on his right hand and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you before the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" And the king will answer and say to them, "Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these, my brother of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me." Then he will also say to those on his left, "Depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels." Moria?
Mm-hmm.
"For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick, and in prison, and you did not visit me." Then they themselves will answer, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry, or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not take care of you?" Then you will answer them, saying, "Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, You did not do it to me. And these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life.
Thank you. If you study what scholars say about this, a good number of them say these are undoubtedly sayings of Jesus that were probably put together in the form that we have them later on. They tend to be ecclesial, in other words, influenced by the church. Jesus didn't talk that much about the church, but these tend to talk more about that. And so it's assumed that as they took sayings that in the story, the people who told the Gospel of Matthew again and again, took sayings that Jesus said and put them in together in one place and have it carry the weight of this story. And it was located just before his suffering and death. So it becomes sort of a summary, if you will, of Jesus' moral teaching, of what he wanted the people to be about. However it got together, the clarity, it seems, is pretty obvious, is that what Jesus is talking about, that people will be in or out, if you will, is not because you have done something evil, but rather because you have not done something good. When you check that against the way we keep people or not keep people in our congregations, it tends to be, we're very wary of people who have done something evil, but we're not very wary of people who haven't done something good. So it's really omission that Jesus is talking about here, and in very strong ways, in very strong words. There are six things specifically that Jesus deals with: the people who are hungry, people who are thirsty, people who are strangers, need some acceptance, people who are naked, people who are ill, people who are in prison. And I wanted to suggest that we think about it in a couple ways, and that's where this board comes out. I don't know, again, how many of you would all be able to see it from way over on the other side, that if we would list sort of the traditional ways that people have responded to these things. Let me just give you mine, and then you can add your own as we go along. Traditionally, if we talk about the hungry, we often will end up with Thanksgiving baskets, right? Okay. We talk about the stranger. Maybe, I don't know how many people remember this. Most people don't even have back doors. Do they? About the back door handouts? Remember the back door handouts? Or giving money to somebody on the street is part of it. If we talk about the naked, we give our used clothing, right? We talk about the ill. We talk about the getting some kind of, well, let's see what I wrote down. I remember what I did. Oh, you share soup, right? Chicken soup, you remember, you used to send it down the street. I don't know if anybody does that anymore. And if you talk about prison, I remember a group of, unfortunately it was women I was talking to, and they were talking about doing something for the people in prison in Chicago or in Cook County. They wanted to be sure that there was Lutherans that were being helped.
They were admitting there were Lutherans in prison, though.
No question about it. Right, and I was really taking denominational pride in that, just somehow didn't fit. that at least they were sure that the Lutherans were being eliminated from business. And I don't know what it would be about McThirsty, but maybe it would be at least a discussion, if nothing else, of the importance of water. They may not be clear.
They might have been on the pure water.
Could be. But if in more contemporary, people might be talking about bread for the world, right? For the world here. And here they might be talking about water systems. Jane Rossing was here.
from Senegal and tell us how she, they're working out the horoscopes, or maybe coronation or something like that. And if the stranger, it might be shelters for street people, right? And then for the naked, it might be Lutheran World Relief. It might be teaching people to sew. Or even in one instance, I remember out to starting a small textile outfit to help people who need clothes. And people who are ill, we probably would talk about getting somebody to, well, I'm over the Hallmark card committee. Right? Everybody gets a card. And in prisons, then we'd be sure to have the prison chaplain come and talk to us. Or maybe even prison reform. I wondered then what it would be like to talk about these things in terms of our personal life, both about what's happening to us or in our rainbow experience of these last weeks, what these things mean here or even in a far out experience. I don't know how many of you were at the discussion last night, but it would be sort of interesting to also talk about who was hungry last night in that discussion. Who was naked in that discussion last night? Who was imprisoned in that discussion last night? Or how does any of this affect you in terms of, are you hungry, thirsty, stranger, naked, ill, or what are you doing about any one of these things? Then I was also interested in seeing, what would it be to go far out with it? Just get some big ideas that go further out. And to the column there, way over the other side. What would it be to deal with the hungry? Would it be really redistribution of the wealth? Is that really the only part? I'm not asking you to answer it. You're going to work in a moment. All this is preparation. You'll get lots of work to do. Just let me tell you mine. What about the thirsty who may be... really don't have good water. Could we take 1 month's military budget for all the nations in the world? Just 1 month? Could that be done and solve all the water problems? How about the strangers? Could we take 1 week of U.S. television commercials devoted to being friends and turn a country around? Would it be possible for anybody to organize something like that? How about being naked in the terms also of being exposed and being vulnerable? Could we do what Luther was scared to do? Martin Luther wasn't scared very much. I don't think many of us would like him because he just blurted out just about anything. What he never did, which and I've always wished he would, is that he would have started the third sacrament. He was close to it in his table talk, but he never did it. I don't think he had the guts. And I think that would have been then what he called mutual consolation of the brothers, but what I would call them mutual consolation of sisters and brothers, which was simply making a sacrament out of sitting down with someone else and talking about things that come and forgiving and being forgiven by one another. What if Martin had made it a sacrament? What if we were all called to do it every week in remembrance of him? Wow, I like that. Ill, what does it mean to be ill? To be marked with not being able to use everything that we have? I wonder if we could find a congregation that would rename itself Failure Lutheran Church. and enable people to come who see themselves as failures. For it seems to me we all do, in some ways, almost at any time. And that often we give the impression that to be in the church is to be the non-failure, and rather it's the gathering of people. Or as Einar Billing wrote in his marvelous book on our calling, it's life organized around the forgiveness of sin. Most people don't even see that or hear that from us.
Now, a great challenge in dealing with the ill nowadays is dealing with people who have AIDS.
Exactly, would be another aspect of that, for sure. And we'll get a chance to toss that into the hospital. Let me do the last one, the prison. I wonder if our real imprisonment isn't just simply our fear of death. I don't know anybody who's really afraid of cancer. I know all people who are afraid of death. The fear behind cancer is death. I'm going to have my prostate checked again in September. He's watching it. He's worried about cancer. 1 in 10 men, right? 150? We'll get it. Sure, I'm going to have that checked. Fear behind it isn't cancer. It's what cancer does. And cancer and AIDS and whatever else brings death. I don't mean that we can do away with death, but I wonder how we learn to deal with our fear and how much of our life is shaped right there. Well, that would be one way of working on sort of a far-out thing. What I'd like to ask you to do is to take some time. Don't do it yet. Just take some time in a moment and deal with these three areas and talk with, I'm going to ask you to talk with two other people, about what you would say these things mean to you in a personal way and out of your rainbow experience, if you've had that here or elsewhere, whatever that may be. Or in some far out way. You can do any one of them, any order you want, no big rules about it, but just to get you thinking about this part of the scripture where Jesus talks about it. I don't want to lose the fact that this dealt with dealing with people who didn't have food. This deals with also people who don't have water and people who are truly strangers. But there's all kinds of meaning to that. And I'd be inviting you to do some thinking about that and sharing with one another. Now, I know some people don't like to get into small groups, and it's perfectly legitimate to get in a small group and sit there and go, No, that'd be fine if that's what you want to do. But if you've got some further holding courage, you might want to even say something or react or say, I don't think so, or whatever it may be. So would you be mind taking 10 minutes and to turn in just little groups of three? And I just wanted to show some of my other than Lutheran friends who are here this week how difficult it is to get Lutherans to talk. Dear me. Good. I wondered if there would be some value, at least I hope there will be some value, in just sharing from some of the groups around. Some of the things that you got at, don't give us everything, but where did you go on this list, and what did you lift up, or what was something that struck you well that somebody else said, or even you said, or whatever like that? Should we just, let's start like in the middle somewhere here and ask a group and just go on around. Say it again, they didn't all get it. Porn magazine. Okay. They didn't catch that word, I think it was. Yeah. All right. Yes.
I like to point out that we're looking at this in a one-directional way, mm-hmm. and that is the ministry that we do to those disenfranchised people. And I'd like us to think about, at some point in time, how they also are ministering to us as we're doing whatever.
That's what I meant in the personal file, too. How does it come back to you? Sure. Mm-hmm. Somebody else?
Well, we were talking about, or I was about, the a prison fellowship. I went, had an opportunity twice to go to this prison. And we gave a program, and we brought cookies and things like that. But we, it wasn't just that we sat up in front and gave a program and the people sat way, you know, in the back like that. We were all right together in the same room, sitting like we are here. You did, you know, the person next to you could have been one of the prisoners. And we had a wonderful opportunity to really talk to those people, you know, and really we got a lot of back from them. And I'd say if you have that opportunity, you don't get that opportunity too often to do the type of thing we did there, but I've had it twice. And I said, anytime they ask if we'll go to the prison, I'm willing to go. The first time I was rather afraid, but it really was a wonderful experience. And it was a chance to give them a chance to talk to us as well as our talking to them.
Good, thank you. Somebody else? Anything that struck you? It doesn't have to be the same as that. It can be anything. It can be personal. Yes?
It struck me that the word that's used there, that's translated stranger, really means alien.
Okay.
As somebody who does not belong to your culture and your language. Mm-hmm. And how we can reach out to them. You've got a lot of them in this country.
Yeah. Aliens to me are scientists. I've been dating a scientist, and a whole new world. I don't understand lots that she talks about, and I find myself disagreeing with her a good deal of the time too. So it is of alien in certainly in origin and language and everything else, but also it seemed to me of orientation. Not easy, but. I found out how distant I am from a whole world that is growing by leaps and bounds. Sure.
Well, it's one thing to look at personally as far as giving money to all these things of the kind, but we've also got to look at it from the standpoint from this government and other governments of providing work that's meaningful to these people, some kind of to channel to all these young people, that these generations that are coming into work. My wife and I are in the Gideons, and we have a ongoing prison ministry. Mm-hmm. We talk to these people in their cells, mm-hmm. you know, hour after hour. And it all boils down to they don't have jobs. A lot of them have been through school. They go out, they come back in again because they just don't have to do outside. They don't have any way to make money. But I think that the governments have got to look at some way of getting some kind of meaningful jobs for these people that can lift up their ideals and have something to look forward to. A lot of them just don't have that today. And lots of those things can be taken care of. In these countries that we don't have water, for instance, I definitely believe the government should really go in and give them fresh water. They should go in and give good medical care. And try to get some kind of meaningful work for them, so they can. A lot of them would want to work. They have to take care of their hunger, but they just don't have it. And that seems to be, to me, the biggest problem facing the whole country is there's nothing for them to do.
Anybody react to that? Thank you.
This came out with kind of a far idea in our group, relating to say mobilizing a peace, justice and reconciliation corps. The increasing number of young people might be available to give service. I know it's done in the Catholic services to a great degree, but I would like to see the church at large, or maybe our new church, take a look at maybe utilizing the resources of young people in our colleges and universities and vocational, technical kinds of backgrounds, as well as some of the early retired. I think not only are we growing an older population, but that older population is healthier than it's ever been, in some degrees, at least in the part of many. And that might be a place where you wouldn't even have to leave home to provide your service. I mean, you could stay in Seattle or Toronto or Chicago and have a chance to give that kind of service.
Thank you. So, yeah, please.
We have the Stephen Ministry at mm-hmm. church, which is a small effort in Christian care.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
I have been involved with the street people in the Lutheran Compass Center in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how far it goes back, but we have been in Seattle for 19 years. And in all those years, they have been fed a hot meal every day, supported by Lutheran churches. And also, I feel very good about the staff down there. They're very professional, as well as devoted to their work they do. Because I know it's the tip of the iceberg, but I'm glad they're there, because they're in the right place, and I think we could do more. I know. Yeah. But some people do get saved, if you want to call it that way, who are getting back into the workforce. There are few, I know, but it's a beginning. And I'm very proud to be part of that.
That's
and
great.
It has helped me really to get back on track, if you want to call it that way. To relate to them where they are and what they have, and then I come back to my surroundings.
I agree with you about staff. I have one staff person there named Mary, who is exceptionally good. Her last name is Witt. My daughter works.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. She works with the women's street shelter.
Yeah, and that's fairly new. Good. Women have come in the last 5-6 years, and children have come too. That's a new.
I think it's a marvelous place. We tried to get Diane Quast, who's the pastor there, to come this summer, and she wasn't able to make it. She will take you on tours of the place too. The most pissed-in alley in Seattle is what she calls it. Now you'll have to blame her for using that word, not me, because that's where all the urination is done by the people down there, and that's right next to the Compass Center. And what she did for this during Holy Week this year, for Maundy Thursday for the washing of feet, she went out and shined shoes of all those people down there, and had really, a great deal of difficulty getting people to let her do that. Well, we've washed feet here too, which we have done periodically for people who come back in from hikes. People don't want you to wash their dirty feet, and they didn't want Diane to shine her shoes too. And then they would have conversations about that. I thought that was a marvelous.
Along that
super.
Line, may I interject?
Sure.
They get haircuts. We have volunteers who give haircuts there. And maybe that's their only time when they get touched really by somebody
that's
else,
correct.
You know. I think this is a very important element.
Touching is a very, very important thing. Thank you. Yes.
Right, now, could there be a church WPA without infringing on government, and where it was voluntarily sponsored? And lawns were raked, streets were swept that weren't getting done by the government agency. Could we do it?
What do you think, rest of you?
Give it to somebody who is separating church and state.
Yes.
Oh, I know someone who, a pastor who used to have, people who came and asked for money. He would have them, sweep the, in front of the church or whatever. But he finally had to quit doing it because of lawsuits. If someone came and got hurt while doing it, he would be liable, or the church would be liable. And also,
what was that starting
at one
point?
Place that I was working at, it was the Salvation Army used to give bus money for people to go somewhere. Well, one time they did that, and a bus was in an accident, and the person was hurt, and they were sued, and they won the case because of the Salvation Army.
Salvation Army?
Yes, because they gave them the bus money.
Less money and they go out and spend it on a bottle of wine. But you have to take the risk to be there for the occasional one who spends it on this.
Hey, somebody else, any more far out ideas that you people had? I like far out Lutherans. It's an oxymoron, by the way, too. Like jumbo shrimp, military intelligence, all of that. Far out Lutheran. Sure.
So what individual churches are doing in some areas, and one is a case of providing in Seattle, for instance, a daycare center or care center for children to come in with Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Institute when the parents need to be there and the children. I think that was the original, as well as a daycare center that can drop in. And then a church holding a brunch on Saturday twice a month for the neighborhood people in that vicinity.
Okay. Somebody else?
One thing that our group talked about, starting on talking about risk, but some of us were sharing different activities that our congregations were involved with. My congregation is involved with housing homeless people with 11 other churches, and we rotate. It's mostly families, and we house them once a week, and then they move to another church. And it's actually a logistical nightmare, but along with that, we're talking about how you get in there and you think, oh, this is going to be easy. We're going to give them casseroles, and we're going to, you know, this is the overnight of our church, and that's it. And it's not. It's now we've done it for about a year, and we're experiencing some burnout, and that people feel like they haven't given, and there's still so much more to give. And I just thought I'd throw that out as how are other people dealing with, our group just kind of said, yeah, we all feel that way. How do you figure out what's right for your life? And I know our congregation's having a little bit of a problem with
that. Any response to that? Yes.
In our community, we're concerned lots of times with daycare for small children, but we also have a daycare center in one of our Lutheran churches where people can bring Alzheimer's patients or so that the care person can have an afternoon free, and then the community will provide people who will come in and play cards with them or amuse them or sing with them. And it's been an ongoing, very successful program. And then another one that we have is help in the pool with MS patients. When you work with them and you realize that they may, one patient, for instance, could only move one fingers of one hand, and you are able to work with all the muscles of that person. It's exhausting work, but it certainly is a one outing for that particular person a week. Very gratifying in both of those areas.
Thank you.
We have that in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, too, a wonderful daycare place for them to bring people for the day. It's in the Senior Citizens Center.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes?
Well, our group said that we need more martyrs willing to work against the system, you know. But then in the same breath, almost, we said that if each of us would pray daily that God would raise up leaders, that would be a great thing too.
Maybe even from your prayer group.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I might see the new church now become more intimate with its parishioners and as for what they're doing in the way of missions, mission money, that people can become aware what actually where that money is going instead of going up into high administration positions and stuff like that. I'm sure that would make the people more conscious of what they're doing. You know, we talk about the hungry, that's fine. We can take care of it, immediate hungry around our churches. And we should, that's part of our the area of the church, parish. When we talk about the hungry, we're talking about countless millions of people throughout the world. And thirsty people and strangers and which is just staggering in thought and these monies that our new church puts out to let the people know just where it's being going, you know, where it's being channeled out so people become more interested in it and become more involved and given to missions.
What I liked about that about the willingness to work on systems as well, because a lot of the money that's being spent, whether it's in the church and bureaucracy or in the governmental bureaucracy, is decided by people that we elect. You know, we put them there, and having any accountability for what happens with that is you know, it seems to me part of our responsibility. We had Paul Simon here as a guest. Paul and Jeannie are dear friends of mine, and they were here just speaking on a town meeting like in this room one night. It's amazing the kinds of stuff we could learn about the governmental process when we, you know, get close enough to find out what's going on behind. So, to being informed and about whom we elect, whether it's locally or whether it's otherwise. We had, I got so angry at church meetings, church council meetings and other meetings when I was a member of a parish back Park Forest, I'm sure. But it was the dumb things we did there. We always heard from the trustees who told us the doors don't squeak anymore. That was fine. We were glad for all of that. But we had a member of the congregation who was a member of the city council. We should have heard from him. Not about, to get his point of view across, but tell us what's going on in the town. Where are the problems in the town and what's going on there? Or the police department? And the kind of stuff that was happening with kids in our community. We never talked about those things. We always talked about, internal stuff, rather than having a report from the people who are living out in the world. Or there was a guy who was about third in command of Illinois Central Industries, one of the big New York Stock Exchange. Well, he's a member of the congregation. We never heard what they were doing or what they should be doing or what they shouldn't be doing. I know he was whining and dining Ted Kennedy and all the people in Washington, D.C., but I don't know why. But it would have been sort of interesting to find out. So I think there's ways of even sparking up our existing stuff. So maybe the systems we can change best and fastest are our own. So they reflect, so that when the members from your congregation go to a synod convention or something like that, they aren't going to take the guff. They're going to demand changes in the system up the line.
It comes back to me always that I think we need to keep up dreaming dreams, having vision. Mm-hmm. It's a state of mind I think we need to stay in. I think that's always the first thing was the foundation, and it is very biblical. It is what God wants us to do. There's a certain creativity involved. I think that's an element of life. And I always think I know it has to go further than just dreaming. Right. But I do think that is sort of the foundation.
We should be dreaming out here all the time for it. And the reason is because of this empty column, which is the column about Jesus, who was hungry in the desert, thirsty on the cross, had no place to lay his head, right?
Right.
Was naked on the cross, right? Was if being abandoned is ill, he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? And he certainly was the prisoner that was bound and taken away. And the whole business yet, I still think, is about this Jesus Christ. You don't get to this stuff, you don't get the good stuff here without the power that comes from him. And that's what he was about, that he was with and is with the hungry and the thirsty, the stranger, the naked, the ill, and the prison, that we believe that he's there. And that when we are absent from them, we can also be, in a sense, absent from Jesus Christ. We ought to go where Jesus is. And he reveals himself in the scriptures as being with those who are neglected, whether it's AIDS, or whether it's the prisoners, or it's whether the people urinating in the alley in Seattle, or whatever it may be. And we ought to be known for that, the personality of our congregation. That's why the name sometimes makes sense of what we call ourselves. We ought to be known for that kind of openness and that kind of activity that grows out of that dream, that vision. And Jesus' vision was there all the time. You really ought to know God, because God is a friend, and he comes to establish a new way of doing things, a new way of being. He called it the kingdom of God, the rule of God. That's our vision. And I think the touch of the scriptures and the touch with the Jesus that is revealed there, whether in Old Testament or New, is the call that we have to share. Yeah.
I guess one of the things that strikes me as being that might give us some ideas in that far out column are just to read the biographies or autobiographies of persons who have made a difference in significant areas in the world.
Sure.
And I think of people like George Day and Martin Luther King Jr. and Gandhi and Thomas Merton, and there are quite a number of people. And I guess what strikes me about it is that I think that most of the people who have really made a significant difference in areas that matter are people who have a profound centering upon God and the Word.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's just an idea where we might go with, you know, if we're looking for ideas.
And there are books and there are movies and stuff about all those people that help see it too.
There's a good book which is written just about what you're talking about. It's called Call to Conversion. And it's a, like a 3 to 5 page life story about 25 different people. One of them is Martin Luther, one of them is St. Paul, one of them is Dorothy Day. There's a whole bunch of them, you know, but it's excellent. It's available. It's published by Fortress Press.
Thanks very much for sharing.
Thank you.